It's the Troopany Show with your host, James Troopany.
Hello and welcome to the Troopany Show. My name is James Troopany. This is my show. And today we look at Dominion from New Japan Pro Wrestling, a show I know a lot of you have been asking us about over the week. And I've been interested to find out what our particular takes are on it. And to join me today is Mr. Alexander Watt. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm very good. Apologies for anyone following me on Twitter at the moment, thinking I'm going to be tweeting about wrestling, because I've got World Cup fever, so I'm tweeting about football at the moment.
Fair enough, then. I don't normally watch football, but it was Spain versus Portugal last night, and I caught bits of that. And that seemed to be an interesting game.
Yes, that was a bloody lovely game. The Okada Omega of football matches, one might say.
Fair enough. And also joining us this week is Mr. Marcus Green of Total Wrestling. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Good. Glad to be here.
No World Cup for you, then?
No, but I'm interested now that, Alex called it the Okada Omega football, which, of course, for me, would be considered soccer because I get the translation.
I'll translate it for you. The Patriots versus the 70s Dolphins. There you go.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I have no idea if that's accurate or not, so I'll take your word for it.
The 70s Dolphins once had a completely undefeated season.
Oh, there you go.
There you go.
I see.
That's the reason why I said that. See? And the Patriots win everything, so a bit like Spain. Right. Shall we move on then? So the actual
we got
wrestling.
Off track there slightly.
We got sidetracked.
The amazing wrestling
even here.
That happened. Yeah.
Okay, then first match from Dominion was this little affair for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Championship. Suzuki Gun successfully defended against Rapingi 3K in 9 minutes and 29 seconds in a thoroughly enthralling matchup. What happened here was Rapingi 3K did get past their recent issues with Suzuki Gun, but still got beat. But they're getting closer and closer. Alex, what did you think of this?
Yeah, it was a good opener. Should say, overall, this was an unbelievable show, which we'll obviously talk about as we go on. Probably one of the all-time great pro wrestling shows, you could argue. It was stunning. This got it off to a good start, I think. Is this the only match where the champions actually retained as well?
Yes, it is, yes.
Historic for that alone in many ways. But yeah, it was got the show off to a good start. Sho and Yo keep impressing me every time I see them. Their work gets crisper every time. I thought they would go over here, but I understand why they didn't. Like you say, it's kind of that story of them getting closer and closer. In kayfabe terms, they should have won, but they just got screwed out of it at the last moment, which is very classic Gedo booking at this point. I think it wasn't on the level of the matches Sho and Yo were having with the Bucks at the start of the year, where those matches were really setting a tone for the rest of the show. This was still very good. I think it's surprising on top of that Despy and Kanemaru retained, just because of how the junior heavyweight title picture changed later in the night, and it seems like Desperado is going to be the first challenger there. So I kind of assumed that they would drop the belts on that, line of thinking as well. So I think it was kind of a swerve that they retained.
But Kushida's been IWGP Junior and Singles Tag Team Champion at the same time before as well. And a couple of people have done that.
That is true. But, with just freeing up some stuff. But I've got no argument with Destiny and Kanemaru still being the champs. I enjoy their work.
Fair enough. We'll move on to Marcus then. What do you think of the event overall, and what do you think of this particular first matchup?
Yeah, I mean, same as Alex. I thought it was a great opener. Sorry about the phone in the background. Yeah, I thought it was a great opener. Like you said, it was... I didn't think they was going to lose Roppongi 3K, but it's so good to have, like you said, that chase, because... they started out so hot when they first came together. you know, getting the tag straps, taking it to the Bucks, and then obviously, like you said, it's not on the match quality that they was having with them early in the year, but it's cool to see this team that started out so high kind of struggle a little bit, because anybody that's ran in the, you know, Suzuki Gun know that they don't have to be better than their opponents to take away with a win, and that's what they did here. I don't think they were the better team, but obviously those Suzuki Gun tactics went out in the end, and of course Romero is still talking about his team needs to refine and kind of start going with that more sneaky style, if you will. And I think that may be what we see them move into the direction of if they ever want to get over Suzuki Gun. So, good opener.
Okay, one thing I actually didn't mention, and we should probably go back to this, it was in the opening segment of the show. The show actually opened with the presentation of the new CEO and president of New Japan Pro Wrestling, Harold May, a Dutchman who was brought up in Japan, who was a massive wrestling fan, who loves New Japan Pro Wrestling and wants to do right by the company and right by the business. What do you think he's got to look forward to in the coming months, Alex? And what do you think he's going to, what kind of impression is he going to make on the company?
Yeah, well, I kind of skipped past this part at the beginning because obviously the show itself was like 4 or 5 hours. So I was forwarding through, like, why is this dude like riding around Japan? But yeah, it made a lot more sense.
It did look more like a Bond film than it did a presentation of a CEO, I must admit.
Yeah, it was basically like the bit I saw, he was in sort of like a limo or something, driving around Japan, sort of chatting to the interviewers, like, what is this? yeah, I think it's an exciting period. They're going into, obviously, the US shows, and they've got a bunch of new champs sort of leaning in that direction as well, in terms of more American and Canadian champs, so I think there's definitely a push, as there has been over the last few years, to get this into the American market and make it more worldwide. They've obviously got the shows over in the UK as well coming up, which is all designed basically to really solidify themselves as the number two brand. And you would say long term, they obviously want to make a push at WWE. I don't know how realistic that is, because WWE is obviously got the market cornered, but I think if they can become a viable number two promotion, then that only helps the business as a whole. And that's obviously, I think, the long-term plans, and obviously keeping hold of the big names will be a big part of that as well, that he's going to have to, I guess, have a hand in.
I think if they come off a strong style evolved in the UK with crowds approaching sellout, then they are the number two wrestling promotion in the world. There is no,
yeah, I mean, as far as I know there were still a few tickets available, but because I obviously left it till the last minute to try and get hold of some. So I'm up in the cheap seats. So there were a few of those left, but all the floor had gone. All the good seats had gone.
I think we're at the point where you can't deny New Japan are the second biggest company in the world. I think number three is an interesting toss up between AAA, a CMLL, probably Noah, Ring of Honor, and Impact. That one's trickier. Not all Japan. But the number two is certainly New Japan's to take at the moment. Marcus, what are your thoughts on Mr. May and the job that he has in hand?
100% agree with you, fellas. I mean, you know, I definitely appreciate the ambition, and obviously that's where you want to take the company now that it's, you know, as hot as it's ever been. And, you know, with this talent and this string of quality shows that they're able to put on such a consistent basis. It's nuts. You know, it is a bold move, but like I said, I think this is the perfect time. We talk about international expansion. This is their time. I mean, and like you said, James, I mean, you know, the argument for number two is well in hand, but I think they got that on lock. I mean, with just showing this show alone, I mean, we could track it all the way back from Wrestle Kingdom and just see what they've been, you know, that wave they've been able to ride up until this show. And I'm sure what they're going to do in the G1. So, you know, like it's gonna be a hell of a task, because like Alex said, that juggernaut has a lock over here, but I think this is the perfect time to come in and kind of knock them off the board, just because of the difference in quality you talk about with these two companies is just so vast at this point. It's nuts. So I'm very much looking forward to seeing, you know, how he spearheads this new global expansion that they're heading into.
Indeed. Right then, we'll get back to the wrestling now, for that little aside of politics. The next match was Dave Finley and Juice Robinson. They defeated Chaos, Jay White, and Yoshihashi in 7 minutes and 26 seconds. thoroughly entertaining match. Young Dave Finley gets a pinfall, a clean one over Jay White, which kind of sets things up for the future. Marcus, what did you think of this?
Yeah, another fun one, another fun tag. We can never say enough good stuff about good old Juice and Finley, specifically Finley. You know, sometimes it's easy to, leave him in the background and forget about him, but he's slowly but surely been, just showing just how damn good he is. And you know, we've always talked about and praised the rise of Juice and all the great stuff he's been doing. And, you know, I think I said on one of the last shows, both of these guys are poised for near future championships. And you know, this match was a perfect indicator of that with obviously Juice, taking a stand against Jay, who's been doing this thing without, I think Juice has got a lot more momentum behind him in terms of, both crowd and, just everything he's been doing in the ring. So great, great match here.
Alex, what did you think of this particular matchup with Finlay and Robinson?
It was Juice who got the pin, wasn't it? Not Finlay.
It was Juice who got the pin. I thought I said Juice got the pin.
No, I think he said Finlay, but I think that was, yeah. But anyway because I was quite surprised that Juice got the pin over Jay White, even though I kind of knew Juice would get the pin, but I thought he'd pin Yoshihashi. But it was interesting that he straight up hit the Pulp Friction and pinned Jay, because obviously they were building him for the title shot at Jay. I just assumed they'd keep Jay White looking strong in that sense and having pin Yoshihashi. So, but either way, it's obviously setting up that US title match, which I think they've confirmed for the G1 special in the US now,
yes,
as expected. Other than that, this is a fun little match. Felt like Juice and Finley were having a great time, just trying to make everyone laugh, particularly Juice with how over the top he was being on the apron waiting for the tag was quite funny. Also, Juice's walkout gear now has reached the point where I think even sort of 1996 Shawn Michaels would think it was a bit much. It's so like sparkly and over the top. But I'm enjoying it. It's cool to see how far Juice has come up the ranks and how smartly they've built him in New Japan into where he is. He can get that title shot, and I think that'll be a really good match.
He's a serious threat for any championship he runs up against at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah, I think, I don't know, I'm dithering back and forth on which way they'll go with that, because they obviously are very hot on Jay White and want to push him in that position, but might be a good time for Juice to win the belt. We'll see.
Okay then. So the next match was a Suzuki Gun match, which featured Minoru Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. defeating Chaos, Tomohiro Ishii, and Toriano, 8 minutes and 42 seconds. This sets up a massive main event for the Strong Style Evolved Tour in the UK of Minoru Suzuki versus Tomohiro Ishii over the RevPro British Championship. I'm really looking forward to seeing that when it comes out on streaming. That should be absolutely outstanding, and I can't understand why we haven't had this feud before. Alex, what did you think of this matchup?
Yeah, I agree on how has this feud not happened before. Like, and I'm so bloody delighted that I get to see that live. I can't believe that's been booked for the UK tour. I just assume that will be on a massive show in Japan. So, yeah, I mean, every time they were interacting in this match, it was absolutely amazing. They obviously just battered the crap out of each other, which is what we want to see from those two. I loved at the start, like, Zack Sabre Jr. looked like a guy outside a kebab shop at 3 a.m. trying to hold his mate back when he was trying to stop Suzuki attacking Ishii, like, before the bell.
It's not worth it, bruv. It's not worth it.
It was very, he's not worth it, mate. So Suzuki and Ishii stuff was great. Best counter to a low blow I've ever seen from Zack Sabre Jr. Loved that. Kind of as expected, Zack Sabre Jr. getting a submission win over Yano, kind of how I thought it'd go, and Suzuki and Ishii then just carried on hitting each other after the match, which was great. No one was safe at that point, basically. The main thing here, besides the Suzuki Ishii stuff, is I really want to see Suzuki and Zack Sabre Jr. challenge for the heavyweight tag titles down the line, because I think that will be a hell of a lot of fun. I hope that gets set up down the line, maybe at King of Pro Wrestling or something like that.
That would be very, very cool. Also, you've got, obviously, Tag League to come this year, which should be really interesting if those two are sticking together.
Yes, if they got a good run in that tournament. Or, yeah, maybe could push them towards getting the shot at Wrestle Kingdom on the back of that, which would be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah. All right, then, Marcus, what did you think of these two teams?
Yeah, more of the same, you know, agreeing with you boys. I mean, I always talk about how, like, the perfect definition of an odd couple, Ishii and Yano is. And I think this was, like, a perfect contrast in terms of tag teams with both of these teams. I mean, you literally have assassins on one end, and then you got a guy who, you know, basically, you know, the Stonewall Pitbull, and then it's Yano, who you really can't describe and just, you know, any set of words, really. You just kind of got to see Yano. Yeah. But I really liked it. I mean, Suzuki and Ishii literally trying to beat the piss out of each other. Yano just doing his thing and trying to survive Zach, as anybody going against Zach is trying to do. And again, like I said, with Zach, when you're on offense, you're on defense. And for this guy to be able to kind of that low blow like that, that's vintage Zack Sabre Jr. So, another great early on match. And, Suzuki is just maddening, but if looks could kill, like one of the final shots they did of Suzuki, when he looked over his shoulder, I don't know if that was at Ishii or Yano, but it was like sickening. this is a small note. I'm just glad that he's going to get somebody like Ishii and he's away from Yano, because Yano was literally, it felt like he was on like a suicide mission early on in the year against Suzuki. So I'm just glad I don't have to pray for Yano as much now. This is teasing something great between Suzuki and Ishii. Get your eyes ready, people.
Indeed. Well, we look forward to that on the UK tour. It should be amazing in a couple of weeks' time. Speaking of things which we're not...
Yeah.
Sorry?
I said hell yeah.
Speaking of things which were not amazing, the I Am Never Openweight three-way title match between Hirooki Goto, the current champion, Tai Chi, Michael Elgin, was won by Michael Elgin. And it was rubbish. 30 minutes and 46 seconds of my time that I will never get back. This was dire. I have a reason to despise this match. I already don't like Michael Elgin anyway. He's a fairly horrible human being. But the fact that he used a Japanese Ocean Cyclone suplex is just wrong. Just so many shades of wrong. That because that's Manami Toyota's finisher, and he just isn't good enough. He doesn't deserve to use that finisher. And I was very actually upset. I have a quote actually from one of the people I follow on Twitter. We All Falter, who is an awesome dude, and he goes a regular at pro wrestling. In fact, he might be there this afternoon. And he had something special to say to Michael Elgin, which I will find whilst Mr. Marcus Green gives his opinion of this particular match.
You know, I was only acknowledged and was rooting for one person in this match, and that's Hirooki Goto. The match itself was what it was. And I'm glad Goto did take the pin, because this very much opens up the way for a rematch, and that I hope Goto thoroughly wins. This was not really a match I was looking forward to, and certainly by the time I got to the end of it, I just wanted to give me a bucket and readily throw up. But I just hope Goto can get it back. That's about it. As for the champion,
We All Falter's response to the news that Michael Elgin used a Japanese Ocean Cyclone suplex was fucking bollocks. I did say
the most F-bombs that has ever been dropped on this podcast, and it is absolutely warranted.
I will obviously be using the beat machine quite a lot whilst I do this. This is a family-friendly podcast. Alex, what did you think of this debacle?
Yeah, I mean, on top of what you said about the Japanese Ocean Cyclone Suplex, he's also a misogynist, so why is he using the move of the greatest female wrestler ever? There's something wrong there. I mean,
Michael Elgin,
all agree.
Just wrong.
Well, quite, yeah. I think we all agree that Goto probably deserves better than this.
But, yes.
And I think beyond that, like, it's disappointing that when the main event has a big focus on this inclusive storyline they've been doing, that they still have on the card, particularly Michael Elgin. But trying to take myself out of that and appreciate it as a match, which wasn't easy, because I really wish they wouldn't have Elgin on the roster when they have so much talent. But this is the first New Japan triple threat in like 5 years. Should have been saved for a better occasion, in my opinion. But it was still a big deal that they did a triple threat. In many ways, it was Tai Chi was just there to take the pin in the end. But I think the one thing they did do well was I bought at the end when Tai Chi came in and hit the guys with the mic stand that he was actually going to like win the match, like cheat to win. So that ended up being a good false finish. But yeah, it's hard to appreciate this just as a match because of everything surrounding it. But yeah, hopefully if Goto's not going to get the belt back, he can have a good run in the G1 because, you know, poor Goto anyway, because he's always just that nearly man who's not quite on the level of some of the other guys. But you just kind of feel like, he's so close to being on that top tier. And he's so talented. So we'll see what they do with him in the G1, I think.
Yeah, it's just, this was just dreadful. I just can't say anything happy about it.
It's just disappointing that they re-signed Elgin to a new contract and stuff like that with everything that's going on. It's poor. But they are.
Yeah, we can't always be happy about New Japan doing everything because they don't sometimes get things way wrong. This is one of the things they've got way wrong. Anyway.
Yeah.
Moving on to one of the things they got right. Los Ignorables de Paham...
Every time.
Los Ignorables de Japón, Evil and Sanada unsuccessfully defended their IWGP heavyweight tag team titles against the Young Bucks, who become the first team to win the junior heavyweight and heavyweight championships as a team in a match that was astoundingly good and would be a match of the year contender if it wasn't for some of the matches later on this card. This was absolutely fantastic. 15 minutes and 3 seconds. Alex, your thoughts?
Yeah, this was absolutely tremendous. Best match of the night to this point. Some ones later probably took its thunder a little bit. But yeah, I'd say other than the obvious Bucks against the Golden Lovers a few months ago, probably the best tag match of the year so far. The story was great. The selling from the Bucks, amazing again. You know, having to, with Matt selling his back again, and then Nick adding the extra element with selling his knee after he kicked the ring post. You know, they were telling the story of them having to overcome this adversity to win. It's time for everyone to stop calling these two spot monkeys, by the way, because they are two of the most complete performers in the business at this point. Like, the story was so well done. It led to like amazing drama in the last 5 minutes or so were insane. Like, I genuinely thought it was over about 6 times. They did it so well with the false finishes. I guess the main surprise was that the Bucks won in a way.
Yeah,
Or at least at the time. I think it made a lot more sense once we got to the stuff later in the night.
Yeah.
But I thought they might have to wait a bit longer and it'd sort of be a story of them having to get used to the heavyweight division and stuff like that. And then maybe they'd win them on the US shows. Whereas instead, I think they're just doing a rematch at the US shows now. But yeah, it also made sense why they told the story the way they did, because they were full on babyfaces in this match, which was a little bit surprising given how the storyline's gone. But again, I think that was setting them up for what happened at the end of the night after the Omega Okada match, where basically they're good guys again. So I think it was interesting they worked the match that way. It worked brilliantly. Obviously, Evil and Sanada were amazing, as they always are. And yeah, I'm looking forward to the rematch as well, because these teams have got great chemistry. And yeah, the Bucks hiring Callis after the match for commentary on all of it was very funny as well. Very young Bucks, that one.
Marcus, what are your thoughts on the team that does this for a living?
absolutely love this match. You know, if you've been with the, if you've literally been with the Bucks like me, in some form or fashion since the Generation Me days, this is the type of match that really made you appreciate just the evolution of these two men. Again, to piggyback off of Alex, whoever's still calling these guys spot monkeys, just shut the hell up at this point. There's no debate to be had. You know, they sell, and not we're not just talking about insane amounts of merch, okay? like it's ridiculous. And what's crazy about it is these probably legit things that hurt on them just because of the, you know, the insane schedule that they have. But again, the story that they told was so good because obviously Matt's still probably legitimately still in his back, and Nick, you know, with the foot was amazing, and just seeing them go for so many of their classic tag moves and not be able to get them, and somehow persevering through two guys who are amazing and Sonata and Evil and L.I.J., who just that faction alone just works so fluidly as a group. But Sonata and Evil have truly, you know, been a great tag team. So, you know, they would have had a lot of work on their hands even without the injuries. But, you know, it was amazing to see those guys persevere.
Yeah,
and again, I think Alex called it out in their last big match. It is so great that these guys are going back to beating teams with that more bang for your buck. I love that finisher. So, you know, it's great to see them going back to that and really pulling stuff out. So, you know, it really felt like these guys, you know, obviously it's been an entire journey just to get to this match, get to this division. But even through this match, it really felt like, you know, they had to climb a mountain to get those straps. And it was really great to see them get that win at the end. So just a phenomenal thing and just another great accolade for the Bucks. So.
Yeah, definitely. It was just so well put together, this match. And I really appreciated everything that these guys did. I've loved Evil and Sonata as tag team champions. I hope they get another run at some point because they've been exceptionally good. And they were kind of cut short because Evil's been off with injury for most of the year. So this was a shame for them to lose the titles at this early stage in their run. But equally, you know, lots of things going on at the moment, and the Bucks are going to be fantastic champions. All right, then, moving on to a six-man tag match, which featured Bullet Club, Cody, Hangman Page, and Marty Scurll. That's Team Cody in Bullet Club language, against Hiroshi Tanahashi, Jushin Thunder Liger, and Rey Mysterio Jr., making his New Japan Pro Wrestling debut. 11 minutes and 35 seconds of a thoroughly entertaining match, which included Marty the Dick Scurll being as dickish as he possibly could. What do you think of this, Marcus?
Yeah, just like you said, you know, a great entertaining match. It did exactly what it needed to do. Didn't go too long or too short. It gave us a great taste of potential things to come. Big Rey Mysterio fan, so it was just phenomenal seeing him, and you know, almost in a dream team scenario with you know, the legendary Tanahashi and of course Jushin Thunder Liger against you know, Cody and his gang. So yeah, it was cool. Obviously this was a bullet win, but I think just some of the stuff that can come out of this potentially, maybe, you know, definitely something with Rey and maybe Skrull or a combination of however, you know, we got to, you know, get these matches, I think is great, because I don't think, you know, somebody like Skrull is letting certain things go. I think he's very much in that zone of he needs to get a leg up over people anytime he's in a mindset. On the last show, the freaking body slam Fale, I think Skrull, you know, drinking the Kool-Aid, if you will, drinking his own Kool-Aid, if you will. So I'll see what type of shenanigans he's going to get off into, and I'm looking forward to it. I hope, you know, we get to see more of Rey, because, like I said, we don't know how much longer we're going to have him before it really hangs it up. So,
definitely, yeah. I mean, also got to love Rey's New Japan tribute gear as well. He had a mask with the half of it was the Rey kind of insignia, and the other half was a New Japan lion. So that was really cool. He does
that
a lot.
Was a
yeah,
lovely mask.
It was fantastic. Yeah. It was amazing. Alex, what did you think of this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, a team of Mysterio, Tanahashi, and Liger, that is a lot of star power right there on one team. Yeah, I mean, it was, like Marcus said, it was went as long as you kind of wanted it to, was really good. I thought Rey especially looked great, probably better than he has in years. Obviously, it was in a tag scenario, so he was sort of running through the greatest hits to an extent, but he was, you know, his movement looked great. I think there were worries about how that arm injury might have affected him, but it looked like they were unfounded. Definitely came out wanting, you know, if they're going to do him and Liger down the line, I don't know, or if they've sort of shelved that. Definitely, I'd love to see him and Skrull have a singles match. Skrull was clearly having a great time bumping all over the place for Ray in this match, and just doing his usual, as we said, being a dick. Cody as well was healing it up brilliantly. Hangman Page looks better and better every time, especially now he's got more of a spotlight, and he, you know, he looked great in there with all these guys. Some people maybe would have been surprised that the Bullet Club guys won, but I think it makes sense with the direction they're going with Cody to have him get the pin here. And I'm sure Liger, knowing what he's like backstage, insisted that he was the one who took the pin as well, and that it was clean and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, so this was really good. Like, as the prelude to sort of the three massive matches on the show, it was a great little piece of work.
Yeah, it was a nice piece of breathing room for that. So we will move on to these three massive matches. Hiromu Takahashi, the current Best of Super Junior Heavyweight Champion, takes his shot and defeats Will Ospreay for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight title in 20 minutes and 20 seconds in a breathtaking match, which was a lot more storytelling orientated than either of these two have come up with before. It was well-paced, nowhere near as risky as some of the things Ospreay's been up to lately, and it was a lovely, lovely piece of work. Kind of a shame for Will Ospreay, because I thought he was going to have a longer run with the championship than he has done. Just really establish him as a potential ace of the company. But this was absolutely fantastic. No complaints from me. Absolutely fantastic match. Alex, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, on the Ospreay thing, I think it's just because Hiromu is the hottest guy in that division at the moment. They couldn't not switch the belt in many ways. Also, Ospreay's neck is obviously bothering him a lot, so maybe he needs to rest that up. But yeah, as expected, this was phenomenal. Like, we knew it would be with these two involved, but like you say, it maybe was worked slightly differently from how we'd expected. There was a lot of story running through it, with Ospreay was basically working as a heel and kind of slowing the match down against Hiromu, which obviously hasn't been the case throughout the title reign, where he's usually the babyface doing the crazy stuff. But they're obviously playing off Hiromu's popularity and that underdog persona.
Yeah, yeah.
So I really enjoyed how, like, Ospreay had to change up his tactics in the storyline to slow the match down, ground Hiromu, because he knows he thrives even more than he does when it's fast-paced and chaotic. But saying that, there was still a bunch of crazy spots in it. Like, Will's running dive off the ramp was absolutely nuts, because he was moving at such a fast pace that I don't know how he managed to time that so well. He had to, like, roll out of it to not fly into the barricade afterwards. And the sunset flip powerbomb late on, where they'd exposed the concrete, they kind of missed the concrete, which was probably a good thing for the sake of Ospreay's neck, to be honest. But they set that up really well early on in the match, to the point that I'd forgotten until Hiromu was, like, leaping over the ropes. I was like, oh God, it's exposed. I really liked that Hiromu had to hit the three big moves at the end as well, which is how he won the Super Juniors over Shimori as well. It's very King's Road, hit your three big moves in a row, including that disgusting pile driver he's been doing, which looks horrible, but is amazing. Yeah, this was basically everything we wanted. I don't know if it was on the level of that Super Juniors final with Ishimori,
no,
which is probably the best. Yeah, probably the best junior match of the year, that one, because that was nuts. But I think probably it's a good thing that they didn't go to that level in this one. I appreciated the story running through it a lot. And yeah, I am glad to see Hiromu back with the belt as well.
Interesting, you mentioned Taiji Ishimori. He's off back to Impact Wrestling to do TV tapings this month on loan from New Japan Pro Wrestling.
Yeah. Oh, that's an interesting one.
So we'll see what happens there. It'll be interesting to see if he turns up as Bone Soldier or just goes as Noah Ishimori, because obviously that's what he's recognized, like, to Impact fans. But we shall see. Marcus, what are your thoughts on this matchup?
Well, I'm glad Alex went first. definitely got out a lot of stuff that I probably would have forgotten to get out. Specifically, calling out, you know, great spots like that that dive off the ramp, which is insane. Like I don't like the way just guys like Ospreay and Ricochet could do something like that and just perfectly land on their feet. It's just nuts. Those guys are the, like, air legends. But yeah, I think that the great thing about this match, and it's kind of like Alex alluded to, was the contrast in styles. You had Ospreay using his high flying, which is what he's known for, to slow the match down and get to a more technical style. And then you had Hiromu using a more, you know, technical style to get to his more fast-paced, high-octane offense. So, you know, that was such a great contrast to see. And obviously, you know, Hiromu's just been riding that wave coming out of the Best of Super Juniors. And you know, I've talked about just how much this guy's really just grown on me. I mean, you know, he's really just a one-man show, even outside the ring. Everything with Daryl and whatnot has literally been a storyline in itself in New Japan. And a phenomenal one at that. But, you know, Hiromu was just, he's a beast in real Ospreay. Obviously, you know, the shape he's in, I can only imagine the pain the guy's in, but he's been just on such a phenomenal roll. Like James said at the beginning, I definitely thought he would have had a longer run because I've really been enjoying kind of the storyline they've been telling of going back even, I think there was the Wrestle Kingdom when he basically was in the ring, but there was Skrull, Kushida, and Hiromu, who literally was the odd man out. And kind of Ospreay finally, you know, defeating the demon, his demon in Skrull, and kind of, you know, going through that group to really solidify himself as the top in the division. But he obviously didn't get past Hiromu. But the match was great. Yeah, I'm just looking forward to seeing this reign from Hiromu. I hope Will takes this time to at least try to heal up some. You know, that's definitely not the last we've seen of him specifically about with this title. So I'm looking forward to seeing if we get a great series out of these two. But yeah, phenomenal match. I don't know if we can top, you know, just the emotional, damn near theater-esque performance that we got in last year's Dominion. But this definitely one of the best juniors matches of this year. Yeah.
Okay then. Yeah, I've got to agree with you guys. I mean, it was absolutely phenomenal. If I'm just looking at the cage match page here, and it's interesting to me that Uncle Dave gave it 4¾ stars. And the cage match users gave it 9.04, which is pretty high praise, really, for the match, considering, you know, and it's interesting to me because I think I prefer the ranking from the cage match guys just because it's a wider sample. It's not just one dude.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, all of the Meltzer stuff is just one dude. At the end of the day, yes, he's really experienced at doing this, but he's just a dude. That's it. So, 9.4 is really good score for this matchup. So, intriguing me there. Right then, we move on to the semi-final main event of this particular evening, which was a 4.5-star match, as we're on the numbers, apparently. Chris Jericho defeats Tetsuya Naito in 17 minutes and 16 seconds of the IWGP Heavyweight Championship match. I must admit, I didn't like this. I didn't think it was that good. It just passed me by.
Controversial.
I just thought, this is all right, it's okay, I've seen loads better things. But I think it was partly because I'm not a big Jericho fan anyway, and him coming down to the ring with that face paint just looked so amateurish. And
it was quite midlife crisis.
And he's out of shape as well. He's put on a bunch of weight since January, since Wrestle Kingdom. And then I've got Callis screaming down the microphone about how wonderful he is. And he's just like, I don't want to watch this. It was all right. It was okay. Naito had a good performance. And it just was blank for me. It was all right. And it's nice to see I don't even see the point in changing the IC title unless they come up with something very, very special for King of Pro Wrestling, because I don't think Chris Jericho is going to be in the G1. I think he could probably last about 3 minutes in the G1 at his current state. He's not going to be able to, like, you know, calisthenics his way out of this one. Marcus, what did you think of this?
First off, I love your opinion, because I could just see everybody who was just riding the wave of this match, specifically backing off of Meltzer, just trying to throw loud potatoes at James. No, he always knows what he's talking about. Sit down. But, yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with the criticism with Jericho. I mean, you know, I literally had to have somebody try to break down what the whole face paint and all of it was about. And yeah. I forgot because, you know, when they explained it, I was like, okay, I still really don't care, but whatever. He's a showman. And yeah, he has picked up some weight. But yeah, I mean, from a technical standpoint, this was like, you know, whatever. And I surely definitely want to get the number to Naito's tailor because that suit was boss. But just that whole outfit was just insanely awesome. But yeah, I mean, it was a, you know, kind of destruction fest. And I think overall, you know, if you kind of look at it from the fact of Jericho literally tried to beat the train Kilo out of Naito. And pretty much from a certain standpoint succeeded. You know, you can kind of, you know, you can appreciate it from that factor. But
yeah.
I mean, this was no technical marvel, specifically going before, you know, the last match. But you know, like I said, I think this is more on trying to move Naito into a certain space because obviously, you know, he just came out of the whole thing with Suzuki. And if you can, you know, battle Suzuki the way he did and still be in that whole Tranquilo thing when Suzuki himself is the very antithesis of that. And then you have somebody like Jericho who literally tried to invoke the spirit of Suzuki in the way he went about this match. You know, I think you can appreciate it from that standpoint. But, I did not expect him to win. But, you know, we talk about somebody like Jericho who's already so associated with the IC title over here. Now he's got this. You know, it creates a unique lane and some very interesting for Naito to do. So, you know, from that standpoint, I appreciated it.
I mean, I think partly one of the reasons why I'm down on it is because I watched it first. Because it was like, I didn't want to get any more spoilers. And obviously the big matches are the ones that get spoiled first. So I went back and watched this one in the main event first and then watched the rest of the card. Just so I could go back on Twitter, to be honest with you. And it was just like... Yeah, this is all right, but I think I missed the flow. I mean, that part may be part of the reason, but it is just like, this doesn't really look an awful lot different to the match he had with Omega at Wrestle Kingdom. He's not being very creative with this. Naito's a brilliant counter wrestler. One of the things I love watching about him is the fact that, you know, his story is always about how to react to stuff. And if you're constantly getting beaten up, then you can't really react to anything. And that's probably another reason why I didn't like it. Maybe it's just me. I just didn't get it. I just didn't see how this fits into the story. And maybe it'll improve. I don't know. But it just wasn't my cup of particular tea. Alex, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting in terms of you saying you watched out of sequence. Maybe that did have an effect because I think this was... very well placed between the junior heavyweight bout and then obviously the heavyweight bout. I certainly agree with some of your criticisms about like how he looked. He had put on weight. His cardio probably wasn't as good as it was at Wrestle Kingdom when he was, people were almost surprised how he was keeping up with Kenny here. He did start looking blown up at the end. The makeup thing, I think, from what I understand, is because he had the makeup on when he did the attack on Naito. Obviously, he'd done it to disguise himself as Bushi in the crowd or a Bushi fan. That I think he decided from interviews and stuff, he said he was going to maybe do it to sort of fit with this kind of loose cannon character he's doing at the moment. But it did look a bit like your dad had been... let loose for a bit, but
it looked like your auntie Nervous had been at the gym again.
Yeah. I think he drinks vodka, actually. I think he has been hammering quite a lot this year from what I've seen, and certainly from his physique. But I did love the start of the match a lot, and I understood why they did it. They obviously were going to take some shortcuts to get round, not his shortcomings, but you know, the fact that he's not going to be able to work a five-star classic in the standard New Japan sense. I think it also, although, like you say, Naito works best as a counter wrestler, potentially this adds something else to him in the long run where he's never really been like out and out assaulted at the start of the match in quite that way. You know, Suzuki obviously does beat the crap out of him, but it's slightly different. So I think possibly that can add more to that kind of underdog feel. He's got a, you know, if they're still planning for him to challenge at Wrestle Kingdom, we don't know. or, you know, or to be in the main event of Wrestle Kingdom, depending on how things play out over the rest of the year, then that could all be a big part of that, of him having to come back up and redeem himself. I mean, some of the spots were brutal at the start, like the powerbomb through the Japanese table was grim.
Yeah.
Because those things don't break easily, so he had to absolutely launch him through. Also, Jericho, when he was throwing, I think, a camera prop at Naito, and like his eye got completely busted up, was brutal, also sloppy, I should say, which Jericho does have a history of, but it kind of fit with the kind of loose cannon idea, character he's going for. I really enjoyed it. Obviously, there was that miscommunication on the Destino as well, which kind of probably backs your point up a bit, but I think that showed their experience and how they were able to get past that and just carry on with the match, and rather than just, like, a lot of guys would have panicked in that situation, but they're both so experienced, they made it look like it was planned and just went and got the match back on track. And yeah, it was a surprise that Jericho won. I wondered if they might do that, because, like Marcus touched on, there's the history with the Intercontinental Championship in the US. So it's an interesting thing that he now holds it in Japan as well. But it's... I don't know what they're going to do with it. That's I think, what we're wondering now, because is he going to be on the US shows? I think he said that he probably wouldn't do that, because he feels it would be unfair to the WWE, whereas at the moment he's working in Japan, so there's that kind of separation. But he could just be, you know, swerving us with that again. He's done that a lot this year, so it's hard to tell.
I mean, they did say he wasn't going to do All In either. But he maybe would do Starcast, because, you know, it's not like it's a wrestling appearance. It's just a podcast appearance, a signing and stuff. So,
I guess we'll see on that. And then I guess where Naito does go next from here, is the G1 story going to be his kind of redemption? I guess we'll find out. He's in a bit of a weird spot, Naito, on the back of...
Yeah.
Has been since Wrestle Kingdom, really. Where we didn't think he was going to lose that match, and he's been kind of trying to claw his way up in a sense, but he's felt sort of just there at times, which is very strange to say with Tetsuya Naito when he's so good. And it felt like him winning this title off Suzuki at this point, obviously to settle this Jericho match, it felt a bit out of the blue. So... Yeah, he's in a bit of a strange spot at the moment, so we'll see where they go with that. Maybe he gets the title shot at King of Pro Wrestling, because him and Omega have a history, obviously.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, well, the obvious challenger to Jericho is Evil, who came down to save Naito at the end of the match.
Yes, it looks like that's the plan, definitely.
So we'll see what happens there and see. I'm guessing that Kizana Road is going to be... Or either Kizana Road, or it's going to be the next event before... We get to the G1 is going to be the last defense chance for Chris Jericho and the IC title. So we'll see what happens there anyway. So
it was funny, I should say, when Evil came out and like Jericho bailed and he was like, "How dare you interrupt?" And also, "Who the hell are you?"
Yeah, that was hilarious. And again, LIJ, nobody leave the building until the whole group leaves the building, please.
Yeah, true. Oh, just one thing. I did. You said we thought that Naito was going to win the championship. There was one person who predicted Okada was going to win, and that was me.
Oh, well, there you go. I apologize. I shouldn't ever doubt you, James, on these things.
There was, I can't remember who the other person. Was it Chelsea? I think Chelsea said that Okada was going to win as well. But yes, there was.
I think we all called the next one, though. To be fair.
Yes, I unfortunately, yes. I kind of knew this was going to happen, but there you go. But it was well deserved. So the main event of Dominion 2018 pitted Kazuchika Okada, the greatest IWGP Heavyweight Champion of all time, against Kenny, the best bout machine, Omega, which is a slightly different animal to the cleaner Kenny Omega. And that pretty much was the story of this 64 minute and 50 second best of three falls heavyweight championship match. To which the cleaner, or formerly the cleaner, wins the championship at last from Kazuchika Okada in a thoroughly deserving effort, I must admit, though obviously I'm a Chaos and Okada fan, so I'm not going to say that. it was brilliant. It was absolutely sheer genius. It's the kind of wrestling match that comes along once in a generation, and it will redefine what pro wrestling means, just like the previous three matches they had have done. You know, this kind of pushes the boundaries of what pro wrestling can do. And it was perfect. You know, it was a perfect way to end the match. It was the perfect way to end this series. But it starts two stories. The guys on Voices of Wrestling were saying in their articles this week, this starts two stories. How does Okada get the championship back? What does Omega do? Now he's the champion. And if you look to the beginning of the long video introduction for this particular match, Ibushi asks Omega, what did this cost you? And Omega replies, this cost me everything. And it's the story, yeah, it's the story of him finding his love again, which means he was reinvigorated. He didn't need Bullet Club to win the championship. He was wrong about that. He just needed his longtime partner, Kota Ibushi, to be back in his life. So then, Alex, what did you think of this?
Yeah, I mean, that end video before the entrance was great. Obviously inspired by Avengers Infinity War, which I loved because it fits so well with the story they've been telling. Wow, yeah. Joe, people actually thought this wasn't going to live up to the hype. it did. It did, and then some. Yeah, this series of matches, my God. They really have set the bar so high and redefined what wrestling can be. This was a fitting end to probably the greatest championship reign ever. Definitely the best IWGP title reign of all time, but other than maybe Kobashi's Noah reign, that's the only thing that comes close to Okada's reign here.
Aja Kong's All Japan Women's reign.
Yes, Aja Kong's also a good shout. But yeah, I probably would have Okada at number one because of just the classics he's been banging out as well. Yeah, I mean, the storytelling this match was incredible, but like you touched on, it's been across the entire feud between Okada and Omega and Kenny's character arc over the last few years. It's just pro wrestling at its absolute best. It's basically been a 2-year-plus story leading up to this Omega title win with all these twists and turns along the way, you know, the Bullet Club stuff thrown in and the Ibushi thing, which was the thing that finally like pushed him over the edge to win. I think as well, we knew they'd go longer than an hour, but I think it's good that they didn't force that. It didn't feel like they were going long for the sake of it. It went 69 minutes in the end. Nice. And it just felt really well paced, all the three falls. Just sort of the story of the match. I don't want to talk too long, but the story of the match, obviously, the first fall, you had Omega dominating, but Okada still always being that slight step ahead of him, and then he won with just a pin combination out of nowhere off a counter to the Rainmaker. So then you had the second fall where Okada took over and was sort of working Kenny's ribs and dominating, and Kenny was having to dig deep and overcome that and the self-doubt that Kenny actually beat Okada. Hit the one-winged angel, got the second fall, sort of reminding him that that's like the difference maker. And then the third fall is just one of the best things I've ever seen inside a wrestling ring. They took basically what they did in the second match with the exhaustion and just took it to another level with just so much, like the drama was unbelievable. They were selling everything, digging deep until Kenny finally got the one-winged angel and won. And then obviously you had the post-match with the Bucks coming out and Kenny putting aside the title so he could reconcile with them. And it was just like the long-term storyline that's gone into that moment when, like last year, all his motivation was winning the championship and to be the best. And then this idea that now he's a better person when he's got his friends and his lover. He was importantly... Yeah. Threw that in to make that distinction, but the fact that he's got all those guys by his side makes him a better wrestler and a better man was just great. Like that group hug when Ibushi came into it, it was just like, yeah, that's just brilliant. And yeah, just, I mean, goes without saying that the work rate in this was insane. Some of the spots were unbelievable. They were calling back to all their previous matches. Kenny's chops, my God, he's been working with Ibushi in the gym. Like, he was absolutely destroying Okada with those chops. But yeah, best moment of the match for me was probably one of the most simple but so effective storytelling-wise. It was similar. Basically a callback to when Kenny collapsed in the second match and the Rainmaker missed. Was in this one in the third fall when Okada hit the Rainmaker but didn't have enough energy behind it. So they just sort of both kind of collapsed, like Omega just took it and it didn't have the power to put him down. It was just everything we wanted it to be and more. Sorry, I've gone on a big, long rambling thing, but it's probably the best match I've seen all year. And it was, the fact that, like I say, people actually were like, can this even live up to the hype? And then they probably surpassed the hype, which they just keep stunning everyone, basically.
I mean, if Okada doesn't win Pro Wrestling Illustrated Wrestler of the Year and this match doesn't win Match of the Year, then North American fans
Something's gone wrong.
If it doesn't get, if it doesn't get that for the Wrestling Observer and Tokyo Daily Sport as well, it should do too. You know, Okada's still your MVP. He's still the hardest working guy in wrestling, even if he's not champion anymore. And this match was just so good, just to give you the breakdown of the falls: 28 minutes and 47 seconds for the first fall, which is kind of like the rough average of where the IWGP Championship matches title match has been lengthwise. And then another 19 minutes, 47 minutes and 47 seconds to the next fall. And then another 23 minutes to the next fall. So it just, like,
the thing is, as well,
pace.
Like that, it didn't feel long. That felt like it zipped by. For me, anyway, I don't think, like, there was certainly, like, the first fall when it had been nearly half an hour. It was like, really? Is that just because they are so good at pacing a match that you don't even notice, really?
Yeah, it felt like Infinity War just blew by.
Yeah, exactly.
Marcus, what did you think of this match then?
Oh, man, I feel like I need another cigarette. Which is mad. You know, everything that you said, James, everything that Alex said, I mean, man, this is like it was the perfect culmination of a 2-year storyline, like a tale of two kings. I mean, I don't even really think you can truly appreciate, you know, this fourth match unless you kind of really go back and really look at, you know, these tales. I mean, you got Okada finally beating Tanahashi and rising to be one of the greatest champions, you know, we've seen in wrestling, period. And then you got, you know, Omega, you know, rising through the ranks as the cleaner from the, you know, the junior division to the, you know, the middleweights, if you will, and then obviously getting to the heavyweights and you know, very much wanting to be the top guy in the company and taking it into a new direction, and these two guys just colliding. And we're getting these epic matches. You really have to see these matches. It's hard for us to kind of put it into words, you know, just, you know, how epic just all this stuff has been, and you know, from Omega now coming out, kind of, I mean, really, the guy looked like he was in the best shape of his life. It took me back to Rocky III, the way he kind of slimmed up and looked chiseled. It was phenomenal, and you know, once we get to the end, really, you know, just that beautiful moment, you know, with the Bucks and the Bushi and all that, and you know, that really, you know, I feel like you almost wouldn't have been able to appreciate this match as much if they didn't do that opening video. Like, what did this cost you everything? And just really breaking down that during, specifically on that second match, where, you know, how influential the Bucks were with that. And then obviously the fallout with that has been a storyline in itself. And it's just, it's such, you know, a beautiful thing. And, you know, like Alex said, you know, you don't want to go too long just talking about everything, you know, within the match. But it really did blow by. I mean, you know, telling the story about, you know, the domination by Okada and then getting the pin, and then obviously they switch back and forth and, you know, telling the story of that great exhaustion thing they did with the second match and kicking it up a level here. But yeah, I mean, it truly was epic. I think the greatest compliment I can get this match is what we saw was so phenomenal, so awesome, so epic that not even Cody Rhodes' ego could get in the way. Not even Cody Rhodes' ego could get in the way. You know, that's saying something right now. Like, not even his ego could get in the way of it. So, I mean, we truly saw something epic. And like I said, I truly don't think you can appreciate what we got unless you go all the way back to the beginning of this journey when these guys, you know, kicked this thing off and just following everything to this point. Because I really truly believe that there was nobody that could really dethrone Okada in this just unheard of reign that he's had besides Omega. So, you know, all you Okada fans, you know, it was a sad day, and this was certainly not a chaos night overall.
No.
As a strong Goto fan, this was not a chaos night. But yeah, I mean, it truly was the perfect combination of events, and I don't know if they could ever top this. I wouldn't put it past New Japan because they've always, you know, over delivered. But yeah, this was some truly beautiful. And no matter what we say about this match, you just got to go see it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, everything is just the desperation moves, the well-planned stuff, the way that they linked everything together, the storytelling from fall to fall, how the match fits together. It's as good a 3-4 match as I've ever seen, and I've seen a lot of 3-4 wrestling because I'm British. So I grew up on 3-4 wrestling. Yeah,
the chemistry between them is just insane. Like, they're up there with like the best opponents or partners, however you look at it, in terms of like in-ring chemistry ever, because they just know what the other guy's going to do, and they don't slip up on anything. Like, no, it's crazy to have wrestled like what, probably a combined like 3 hours or something over these four matches, and I couldn't tell you a spot where it didn't seem to go perfectly.
No, I mean,
which is insane.
I could say even that spot where Kazuchika came off with flying drop kick and Kenny caught him in a tiger bomb. Like, in God's name comes up with that. Well, you fly through the air about 35 mile an hour, I'll catch you and drop you on your back square when you're 6 feet in the air.
Yeah, that was great. Even calling back to his great, just, you know, that moment when he took out Goto in a G1 to even get to Okada. You know, him hitting, I think he had a Styles Clash in this match.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
Yeah, and then even got to the point where, like, Ibushi was like, F it, do my move. and he missed it. I know that had to hurt, you know, something serious. But, I mean, those were great moments as well. And then just, you know, him, like an inverse to the second match, him trying to get him up for that one-winged angel and collapsing in the corner. I mean, that was just... just so many great moments, man. Just God bless these two men. If you say they didn't give more than 110%, you nuts. You're just nuts.
Yeah, this was just absolutely phenomenal. Marcus.
And yeah, I was going to say, Omega's got a hell of an act to follow now as champion.
This is the thing. I actually wrote a story for Total Wrestling Magazine this month. I had actually written an article called The 12 Defenses of Okada. And actually, Dominion came out before... so I had to rewrite it, which was painful. Okada lost, I had to write why he lost, but there you go. I was hoping to leave it as just like, you know, this was happened before the time. but, you know, I was looking at those 12 defenses, and he fought so many different characters and so many different guys. Guys like the difference between like Zack Sabre Jr. and Bad Luck Farley, and he wrestled them and got great matches out of both of them. You know, he just couldn't put a foot wrong for 2 years. Over 700 days as IWGP Heavyweight Champion. 12 matches that I'll just burn in my memory is some of the best wrestling I've ever seen anywhere. And he just is perfect in that role. He is Nick Bockwinkel. He is Ric Flair. He's our Ric Flair. He's that perfect championship guy that you need every once in a while. He'll get it back. Undoubtedly, he will win the championship. But he's the guy. He's your man. He's the one you put your corporate sponsorships around. He's perfect in every way to be a champion in New Japan Pro Wrestling. And thank you, Kazuchika, for the services you've done to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and you've guided it to the path that we're on now. And now it's Kenny Omega's turn to take it to an international audience once again. Speaking of which, first challenger was the man that came down the aisle to maybe congratulate or maybe berate Kenny Omega, and that was Cody. And he will take him on at the Cow Palace. Yes, you heard me right. Mm. The Cow Palace in San Francisco offer Strong Style Evolved G1 Special, which will be in the upcoming months. That's the next major pay-per-view event. It's going to be live on Access TV. It's going to be on the network, on the New Japan World Network not long after that. It'll be JR and Josh Barnett calling the matches for that particular one. So it's going to be an interesting night because that's going to be very, very different kind of wrestling to what we're used to in New Japan Pro Wrestling. But if anything, the Strong Style Evolved shows from earlier in the years stay a really high standard for these house shows in America. What do you think's next for Kazuchika Okada, and what do you think's next for Kenny Omega, Alex?
So Okada, I imagine, is going to be the favorite in the G1 now. I think that's how it's going to be set up, whether
he's been
he wins
trying,
it.
Yeah, is he's it... been trying to win it for 3 years, and obviously he doesn't have the championship weighing on his mind now.
Yes, so I think basically it's him and Naito will go in as the favorites in the G1, I think. I would expect Okada probably to get to the final. Whether he wins it, we will see. The brackets haven't been announced yet, have they?
No.
The groups, usually they've announced them by now. So that's interesting that they're holding back on that.
All I've said is it will be the biggest G1 ever. Read into that what you
want.
It
will be. They'll probably bring in a few surprises. Just with the roster they've got at the moment anyway, it's going to be insane. Omega, obviously, like you say, has got Cody, first challenger. I think we knew that would happen, particularly with the US shows. Then King of Pro Wrestling will be very interesting. It's obviously going to be who he loses to in the G1. That's usually how these things play out. And it will be interesting to see who Kenny Omega's facing on the first night of the G1, because generally the champion tends to lose in the first night, the G1, or there's some kind of story like that. They obviously did it with Okada and Marufuji a couple of years ago to set up their title match at King of Pro Wrestling. So wouldn't surprise me if they did something similar, particularly if it is a Tetsuya Naito. Because I do wonder if at King of Pro Wrestling, Naito might end up winning the belt from Omega, because first runs in New Japan tend not to be that successful. So, in terms of title defenses, I mean, they tend to lose the titles quite quickly. So I wonder if that theme will hold.
To be fair to Kenny, he's got, like, if he's defending the title at Kizuna Road, that's one opportunity to defend the title. That's July. He's got Strong Style Evolved, that's Cody, so that's two. Then you go to the G1, so the title's not defended for a month. That gets you to September. There's that show, that's those three night shows, Destruction. So there'd be one defense there. So that's one, two, three. And you get to King of Pro Wrestling, that's four. So there's a chance to have four defenses. He'll probably only do three, though. He'll probably have three defenses before he gets to King of Pro Wrestling, which isn't too bad, because it kind of like, under their old schedule, he wouldn't defend it till King of Pro Wrestling from now. So, yeah, I think it's probably around about fair. I think he's probably going to defend it three times, and then maybe he could drop the belt at King of Pro Wrestling.
But that also depends on if that's the way they want to go now. You know, we've just all assumed that it's going to be Okada Naito again at Wrestle Kingdom, but maybe they're changing tack. We don't know. We'll see.
It depends. I mean, you know that Kenny has got a ton of emotional and creative investment in this particular product, because you don't get to do storylines like the ones he's done without having that much creative sway. So you've got a feeling he's sticking around. And if he's sticking around, he's a guy to pin a championship on for a long time. You've always got Okada if it doesn't work out. It's not like they're lacking for star talent at the moment. And if you can't go with Okada, you've got Naito. They've always had two guys at the top of the card to swap and change with. Well, now they've got three. It's back to the days of the mid-90s with the Three Musketeers. So they can do that kind of business again.
Oh, yeah. Well, we say it all the time, how good they are at building people up to that main event level, which so many companies just don't seem able to do nowadays.
Yeah.
The fact that, like you say, they lost a ton of guys. It's easy to forget now that they lost a ton of guys a few years ago, and we thought they were going to be like in real trouble. And now, look, they're the best they've ever been, arguably. And it's because they've built Naito and Omega to be on that level with your Okadas and obviously Tanahashi as well, but he's winding down now. So, yeah, it's phenomenal time to be a New Japan fan.
Marcus, this time last year, you told us that the Dominion show from 2017 was one of your favorite shows ever. Is the 2018 version just as good?
Yeah. again, like I said, the insane amount of momentum and just wave that New Japan has kept up since Wrestle Kingdom is insane. Last year's Dominion, I think I still put last year's a little bit ahead of this one just because of I just felt like it was so much more on that show that just kind of just sat me down like a child again in front of wrestling product. And you know, it was so much emotions going through with just the junior heavyweight match, and then obviously the world title match. Not to knock anything else on that card, but those two matches, phenomenal. But again, I think that Dominion is just consistently one of the best shows in wrestling, period, every year. And again, they show why again here. So, again, it's not one of the best matches. I mean, one of the best cards of the year by most people who talk about wrestling, then I don't know what they're talking about.
Yeah, it was just been phenomenal, this show, and to echo your sentiments, I just can't think of a better wrestling show I've seen for a very long time. Everything fits together, it's all nuts and bolts, perfect, with just three fantastic matches. You had the odd clanger, that never open weight championship match, obviously, but everything fits together so well,
yeah. And
the New Japan juggernaut keeps moving on down the line, and we'll see what they come up with next. Right then, that ends our coverage for Dominion 2018. This has been the Troopany Show. I am James Troopany. You can follow me at Sheriff Lone Star on Twitter. You can follow Marcus at Paradox Kid. Thank you for your time this afternoon, sir.
Thank you. Always great talking to you, boys.
And I'd like to thank Mr. Alexander Watt, formerly of the BBC. Thank you very much for your time today, sir. You can find him at AlexWatt187 on Twitter.
Yes. It's been fun chatting about bloody insane wrestling show. Given that I've been talking about the World Cup all week, it's been interesting to talk about wrestling again.
Okay, you can find us at Troopany Show on Twitter and The Troopany Show on Facebook. You can also find us on Patreon, where you can keep us free forever for everyone by providing a pledge there. Next week, I'm not really sure what's going on. We haven't discussed it yet because I think we probably need a bit of a New Japan breather after the emotional outpouring we've had. Though Chelsea is trying to persuade me on doing a beginner's guide to Japanese wrestling, Meiko Satomura edition. So maybe you've got that to look forward to. Because there was a rumor this week in Tokyo Sports that she'd actually signed with the WWE for the Mae Young Classic. We shall see. Until then,
fingers crossed.
Take care, and we'll see you next week. Bye.